If your morning starts with snap, crackle, pop, and it's not your cereal, call Joint Relief Institute for fast-lasting joint pain relief. And yes, it's covered by Medicare. 708-888-0000.
Out there, it's 5:11, and it's good to have you with us on the broadcast today. It's official. Restaurants, especially junk food places, fast food joints, are trying to kill us. Cinnabon now has a churro chelato, whatever that is. So, just thought I'd pass that along. In case you get hungry this morning.
Were you there this morning already?
No. I don't remember. Did I see a commercial for it? Is that where I saw this? I used to be tempted by the Cinnabon place in the airport. They pump that smell out there. I think the regulations, if you have that franchise, you have to get a fan, an exhaust fan, get the fumes out there, and it makes people hungry. But I've overcome that now.
Yeah, I was able to wean myself off of that by just getting a scratch and sniff car freshener that smells like Cinnabon. It does the exact same thing.
That's great. You don't have to eat anything.
That's exactly right.
Do they have a Garrett popcorn one like that?
Oh, well, Garrett's for sure.
I need that for sure.
They make sure that that smell gets out into the street.
Oh yeah.
You know, that's a must. Garrett's, yeah. Well, how are you? It's Wednesday, and it's the fourth day of March, and it's 5:13 right now, and whoever is our first caller on the radio, other than employees of WGN, gets a prize. We'll do that shortly at 312-981-7200. You can always call or text us at that number, 312-981-7200. And the email is turned on, bobshow@wgnradio.com. And because of the coronavirus, there's cancellation fever. I mean, really, it has reached into all areas of life, hasn't it? Nancy Liu is reporting on that for WGN-TV this morning. Hi, Nancy.
Hi there, Bob. You're absolutely right. All kinds of things getting canceled. A big one this week is the houseware show that was coming up at McCormick Place. You know, every year that draws about 60,000 people to our city, and you can imagine how many hotel cancellations there are, how much restaurant business Chicago has lost. So the economic hit is going to be big from the convention being canceled. And yesterday I was at McCormick Place visiting another convention called PitCon. That has brought, you know, laboratory science makers, equipment makers to Chicago. Usually there are 15,000 people at this conference. That is down by about over 5,000 people. Only about 9,000 people came this year. And it was very interesting on the floor. There are a lot of scientists among the crowd there. They're very well informed. A lot of precautions. Hand sanitizer everywhere at McCormick Place. But the good news this morning, Bob, is that the patient who was suspected at U of C Medical Center, that test came back negative. So the number in Illinois remains 4 cases, including a couple in Arlington Heights. So, and, you know, there are no reported deaths in Illinois, but the death toll in Washington is at 9.
We were talking yesterday about Japan baseball, the preseason games being played in empty stadiums.
And yeah.
They're not sure what they're going to do when the regular season starts. What was the story, Dave, about the NBA? They issued something to the players saying no high fives.
Well, the NBA has advised players not to high five each other or to take items from fans to autograph.
Right.
And the other news story this morning is Chicago State University is saying they are not going to send their team to the Western Athletic Conference tournament next week.
Right. Yeah, they had games this weekend against Seattle University and Utah Valley, so they were heading to the Northwest, but not anymore because of what's happened in Washington State.
And we're very close to March Madness, and what's going to happen there, if anything? We'll see.
We'll certainly be keeping track of it. You know, another development is the Catholic Church.
Yep.
Catholic Church now, you know, endorsing social distancing. They're telling people, you know, no physical contact when offering the sign of peace and the Lord's Prayer, communion served hand to hand instead of hand to mouth. So, and parishioners who are sick are being urged, do not come to Mass.
All right, Nancy, no hugging the anchors for a while, okay?
So I'm signing off my phone.
Nancy Liu, WGN-TV. Thanks, Nancy.
Have a great day.
You too. It's 5:22, and let's say hello to Fran from Libertyville. You're the first caller, so you get a prize. Good morning, Fran.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. What are you up to at this hour?
Well, I'm having a cup of coffee, and I'm looking at the paper, getting depressed, and that's why I'm listening to you. You're my ray of sunshine in my morning.
Well, we'll try. Are you off to work later?
No, I'm retired.
Good for you. I like the hours. Not the pay so much, but I do like the hours. What's new in Libertyville? Haven't been up there in a while.
Well, right now it's snowing.
Oh, yeah, we've got some rain and snow in the area, but it's only supposed to be around for a little while, just during the morning rush hour, and then it'll quickly melt by this afternoon. Well, let me get you a prize. Pardon me, Fran?
No, I was just going to tell you, I'm looking at my phone, and I'm bringing up a first show of yours on WLS from June 8, 1973.
No, don't listen to that.
You talked a lot faster then.
Don't listen to that. I think the tape has been sped up or something. How about a $50 gift certificate from Builder's Supply Outlet? So much more than kitchen cabinets. Check out The Edge, their state-of-the-art kitchen and bath showroom in Broadview. We'll get that $50 certificate out to you, Fran, if you promise not to Google around and try to find old TV newscasts or radio shows I've done in the past, okay?
Okay.
All right.
But, Fran, if you find them, please send them to us. The rest of us would like to hear them.
Hang on, Fran. We'll get the information we need to get you that prize. It's 5:24. Yeah, that reminds me. They're running this. It's very nice of them to do it, but it's a promotional announcement, a little commercial that talks about me being around here forever. And they use the word institution in there, which I don't think they should use because people then connect that with me. You know what I'm talking about?
Come on. You're an institution.
And a legend.
You're a legend.
I'm not a legend. I'm a myth. Here's the announcement I'm talking about. Don't get me wrong. I'm grateful they did this, but there are a couple reasons I really don't need to hear this.
The 70s. Or what the president does, but it is not only
music radio. We play the best music. At least that's what it says here.
You're on hostage crisis.
The 80s. They're the best listeners money can buy. I'm totally Bob.
Tear down.
News, traffic, weather, sports.
The 90s.
I'm Bob Sarai.
Y2K.
This weekend.
Another day in the life of Chicago.
America great again.
For almost 50 years, a Chicago institution. Bob Sarat lives here.
Thanks.
I know what it is. The nearly 50 years part.
That one hurt, too. Yeah, thanks.
5-0, yeah.
But institution, bad choice of words, and 50 years. Chris Duffy, our grand high exalted mystic ruler of production, who's the best, he could have come up with a different choice of words first of all, replacing institution with something else. And then instead of that 50-year thing, he just should have said...
a half a century.
Even worse.
Five decades.
How about icon?
No. How about... ubiquitous. How about like the locust? He always returns. You know, something like that.
Every 17 years.
17, yeah. Well, at least it's not 60. Orion's got 60, so he still has you beat.
Yeah, that's right. He does. I know. Okay. 5:25 right now. We'll get you updated on all of the Super Tuesday results. I went to bed last night, and California and Texas were still up in the air. And I guess, let's see, California went to Bernie Sanders. Steve, who got Texas?
Joe Biden got Texas. So it was 9 states to 3 states in favor of Joe Biden.
And 2 still close to call?
Yes. Well, one, specifically Maine is still too close to call. And let's see, there was another one, I believe, too. Maine is the only one that's still too close to call.
All right. We'll get the complete update from you here. That's coming up next. Bob Surratt. Stop it. We've got a whole slew of reporters standing by to bring you up to date on all of the news, including Super Tuesday results. A little after 6, ABC News correspondent Jim Ryan reports from Dallas. And then a little after 7, the moderator of Face the Nation, Margaret Brennan, who was part of the CBS News election coverage last night. They are here. And if I say the name Bobby Batista, does it ring a bell? Do you know who Bobby Batista is? You know what she used to do? Do you remember her? CNN, one of the original anchors on Headline News. Sad to hear that she passed away. She was only 67. She, in addition to being one of the original anchors on CNN, hosted CNN's Talk Back Live. She died yesterday after a 4-year battle with cervical cancer. Bobby was the consummate trooper in her struggle with cancer. She was courageous and fearless in her battle and thoughtful for all the others in her life, even as she fought through the pain. A statement from her husband, John. My dear partner of 25 years of marriage has cut her earthly bonds and is now in peace. And if you see her picture online or in the paper, you'll remember her from those days at CNN from 1981 all the way till almost 2001. She was with CNN, and she anchored coverage of major events, including the Challenger space shuttle explosion, the attempted assassination of President Reagan, the Gulf War. She moved from CNN Headline News to CNN in 1988 and then anchored broadcasts that included CNN NewsHour. During her early career, she was a local news anchor and producer in Raleigh, North Carolina, WRAL-TV. In 1981, she was the writer and assistant producer for the Peabody Award-winning documentary Fed Up with Fear. Bobby Batista, gone at the young age of 67, one of the original CNN anchors. Back when cable news was just beginning and hadn't exploded into what we have now, which is a whole other program talking about how to manage your consumption of news and how to figure out what's editorial and what's not. And you just have to be a smarter consumer now. I know last night, in fact, and my wife said to me, hey, did you hear about the coronavirus case up in Northbrook? And I said, what? And she said, yeah, look at this. And there was a post from a state senator saying that the virus had been detected in somebody in the north suburbs. And I said, wait a minute, well, check out that state senator. Is that really a state senator? And so, you know, we Googled that, and yes, legitimate person on her Facebook page. Then it turns out, because the state senator then posted later saying that she had got received that information erroneously and then posted it. So it wasn't true. This is how things get passed around and how these stories, you know, go around, and many are not true. And you know, the crazier they are, the more dramatic they are, the faster they spread. Lies go viral quicker than truths. And so this guy, this went around, and it just, the genesis of it, who knows how it started, but it was passed along by, you know, legitimate folks, and there you go. That's the story of news today. So, you know, moral to the story, be careful out there, and just, you have to just be a better, smarter consumer of news these days because of the internet, mainly, I guess, right? 542 right now. How about those Blackhawks, Dave? They're still alive, aren't they?
Well, they're still alive. The problem now that they're going to have is with, what are we down to? I believe it's 16 games to go.
Are they still 6 points out
they're
after
still
the
six
win
points
last night?
Out, and the problem is that they might win, but then teams they're chasing are also playing, and mm-hmm. without an opportunity to put some more space between them and the Hawks, and that's what, or at least to make sure they don't gain on them, and that's what happened last night. Those teams are kind of playing leapfrog with each other, mm-hmm. Nashville and Minnesota and Winnipeg and Arizona, and
there's too many in front of them.
That's the problem. So on any given night, it's going to be hard to gain on everybody, even if you win. And look, they're not going to go 16-0 to end the season. That's unrealistic. So they got to limit the damage here. If they're going to lose games, make sure you lose on a night when those other teams aren't winning. That's kind of the way you have to look at it. They can't look at it that way, of course. They have to just go out and win these games and then see what happens at the end.
How many more games? The season is ending when?
16. So you get into the beginning of April, and then playoffs are upon us. So basically another month to go.
And I heard that Corey Crawford got, was he hit on the head or the neck last night?
He said it was the neck, and he took a knee, and so they took him off for a minute. Of course, that's something they have spotters who the medical staff is watching closely.
Oh, checking for a concussion.
They watch for concussions, but apparently he was okay. They said it was not a hit to the head, and he came back in. So all good there because, of course, he's had some hard hits that have sidelined him for various lengths of time over the years.
Yeah, really. And now, let's see, if he's out, who do they have?
You have Subban, who was just acquired last week in the or a couple weeks ago in the Robin Leonard deal.
And then if something happens to him, they get the Zamboni driver. That's how it works now.
No, the accountant.
The accountant, that's the order
Scott
of succession.
Foster, the accountant. He's their emergency goaltender.
And then eventually McDonough and Blunk will put on the pads.
I don't think that's happening. That's just a hunch.
And let's say good morning to Orion Samuelson. How you doing?
Good
there?
Morning.
Oh, what's going on with you today, sir?
Well, we're watching the coronavirus situation because it does impact agricultural markets as well, although it didn't trade the way the Dow traded yesterday. But we ended the day with wheat up 3 cents a bushel and corn up 5 cents a bushel and soybeans up 2¾ cents a bushel. So at least we didn't have the tremendous drop that Wall Street again had, or the gains that Wall Street has when they do move higher. But we're looking at a pretty good weather start here in the month of March, and you know, we'll be planting corn probably down in Texas before this month is over, and so farmers are talking about that, and also talking about, let me give you a bright story. There's a farm in Kentucky that had a 1 in a million thing happen to them in February, February 12th, a lamb gave birth to quintuplets. That's a 1 in a million shot of happening that you get 5 lambs in one birth. So they're keeping the 5 lambs in the house, keeping them warm, and trying to make sure that they all survive.
That farmer needs to buy some lottery tickets, I think, right now. Orion, I have some grocery store questions for you. I'm the person who does the shopping in our household. I enjoy that. But I have a couple of questions, and you probably know the answer. First of all, I never know whether to buy organic or not. Cost a little bit more. What's your take on that? The only thing I know about it is, and I think I'm right, if like avocados, you know, you don't need to buy organic avocados because, you know, you're not eating the skin and right. the fruit is protected. Is that the rule of thumb on that?
Well, I don't look for organic foods. As a matter of fact, I tend to avoid organic because I don't know that there's any benefit to them. I'm not a doctor, but I don't know that there's any benefit to organic foods, just like gluten-free. You know, if you're like Steve of the Steve and Johnny show years ago on WGN, he had celiac disease, and yes, then you need the gluten-free. But I think so much of this today is a advertising situation, a promotion, and, you know, in the fake meat or laboratory meat, as I call it, I don't think they ought to put that in the meat department. They ought to put that in the produce department because it's plant-based. It's not meat. And to put it in the meat counter is confusing a lot of people, I think, on is this really fake laboratory meat or is it real meat?
Yeah, so, read the ingredients.
Yeah, read the ingredients. And if you do on the plant-based laboratory meat, as I call it, you'll find about 10 or 12 ingredients there that I can't even pronounce the
yeah,
names of.
It's always, so. Always a bad sign. But right. Back to organics, I mean, don't you want to have something that's free of pesticides? Allegedly, anyway.
Allegedly, yes. No, it doesn't bother me. I mean, I've known a lot of people who have consumed that product that has been non-organic or that has been organic, and I think they're living as long as other people. Now, I'm not a doctor, but I get bothered by what I think is false labeling, really, on what it'll do for you. So,
okay. What about apples? Do I keep them in the refrigerator or not?
Oh, that's a good question. That's a good.
And in the store, they're not in the fridge. And then we tend to sort of put them in the refrigerator when we take them home. And then I thought I read somewhere that it's actually they'll actually keep better if they're not refrigerated, which would make sense because you know the stores don't put them in the cooler section, do they?
No, they don't. And growing up on the farm, we had apple trees, and we never put them in refrigeration or anything like that. And they probably will deteriorate a little bit faster if you don't. But the apples naturally tend to stay with you for quite a while. And I enjoyed eating them off the tree on the farm and still enjoy eating fresh apples that I don't keep in the refrigerator. Gloria doesn't keep in the refrigerator, so.
Well, and then I won't. There's nothing like the taste of a fresh apple from an orchard. I mean, it's
absolutely
totally
right.
Different. And also, at farmers markets, you can get some good stuff. I mean, it's a little bit pricier sometimes, but those farmers markets, that's the real deal, isn't it?
It is. And we, as a matter of fact, now have farmers markets in the wintertime. In Huntley, they do a farmer's market about once a month over the winter months, and they get a good turnout. They get good products. They get a good turnout. The thing about apples is if you keep them stored in nitrogen, nitrogen-enclosed facility, they will last longer, but I don't know if they'll last that much longer.
So. Note to self, buy a nitrogen closet for apples. All right,
no, buy a bigger building because I've been on some orchards where they've had some fairly large sealed buildings so that they keep it there, and the apples do last longer if they do that, yes.
I think Evanston also, I don't know if they still do, I think they still do a year-round farmer's market enclosed. Yeah, those are the best. I can't wait for the season to begin where you have farmer's markets everywhere. That'll be coming up very soon here.
It will be very soon, so enjoy.
It's Shopping with Orion, our new feature here at 5:56 on a Wednesday morning. Thanks, Orion.
Okay, have a great day.
You too, sir. And let's check on the markets, find out what kind of a day it might be on Wall Street. Steve?
Well, right now it looks pretty good. Dow futures are up nearly 2%. As a matter of fact, S&P and NASDAQ futures are up about 2% as well. So the opening looks to be a positive one later today. Of course, that can all change. We've got about 3 hours to go, so there's plenty of time. The Outlook, sponsored by Associated Bank, shows the ADP private payrolls jobs report for February out today. Analysts are forecasting 175,000 new jobs last month. That would be a big drop from the 291,000 private sector jobs created in January. Also today, the ISM non-manufacturing index is out. The market services PMI report will get the beige book from the Fed. On the earnings calendar, Abercrombie & Fitch, Navistar International, Campbell Soup, and Dollar Tree all reporting quarterly financial earnings today. Some of the things that could move the markets on Wednesday, March the 4th.
It's 6:09. ABC News correspondent Jim Ryan is in Dallas. Texas went for Joe Biden last night. California, Bernie Sanders. And Jim, I'm confused about a couple of things. Are two states still too close to call? Is that the word?
Well, California is technically still too close, although it seems to be going for Sanders. Maine is still technically too close to call as well. So I think those are probably the only two on the chart that are not completely decided officially. But I think we have a pretty good idea of who's going to take those.
And what's next now? Where do we go from here? What's the next big day in this campaign?
Well, we'll start having in a couple of weeks. Florida is maybe the next big challenge for these candidates. They're going to be out there doing their best to try to round up votes over there. Tough sledding for Bernie Sanders after what he said about, you know, the education system in Cuba under Fidel Castro, Bob. You know, the controversy that ginned up, and certainly is going to come back to haunt him once he's campaigning in Florida again and trying to rally support in a place, and especially in South Florida, where so many Cuban expatriates live. So it'll be interesting once this campaign moves over that direction. But for now, Bernie Sanders is probably licking his wounds, and Joe Biden is taking a bit of a victory lap.
I guess the word from all the analysts and commentators, the surge in the South for Joe Biden, greater than expected, and Bernie Sanders carrying California, not a surprise, right?
Correct, yeah. In fact, you know, last week when the polls were showing that Bernie Sanders had a pretty convincing lead here in Texas, I mean, that was kind of surprising. This is a place where even the Democrats are pretty moderate to conservative compared with the rest of the country. So for a self-proclaimed socialist Democrat to come in and show strength here in Texas in polling, I think was a surprise to a lot of people. But sure, the victory in South Carolina on Saturday, then Pete Buttigieg dropping out, Amy Klobuchar dropping out, both of them, along with Beto O'Rourke coming to Dallas to endorse Joe Biden, that may have had some impact as well. They urged their own supporters then to back Joe Biden in this race. People who already, you know, and early voting was extremely heavy this time around, Bob, maybe even setting records for this primary. People who voted for Buttigieg or for Klobuchar during early voting simply lost their vote. They couldn't go in on Election Day and say, sorry, you know, my person dropped out of the race, can I vote again? Nope, you can't.
And what about Mike Bloomberg? What do we think he will do?
I think he's going to take some, you know, time today to reflect on where to go from here. You know, he has unlimited wealth and unlimited resources to continue the race, but at some point he's going to ask himself why. He spent tens of millions of dollars here in Texas, outspending everybody in terms of political advertising in this state, and it didn't pay off at all for him. The only, you know, he collected American Samoa last night, and that was the only one with, I think, 9 delegates offered up there. So I think he's eventually going to have to face the music and say it may be time to get out. Could be today, maybe tomorrow. And I think reason would hold that he would offer his endorsement, if he did, to anybody, would be to Joe Biden.
My wife and I looked at each other when we saw American Samoa going for him, and we were thinking, oh, let's see, American Samoa, what is that? Where is that? But he picked up a few delegates that way.
Yeah, he did. He spent, and this was funny, I mean, he's going around spending tens of millions of dollars in the various states, something like $500 million altogether to try to get some votes going. In American Samoa, he spent a grand total of something like $900. $900,000, but $900 on advertising there. And it was enough to get him those delegates out of American Samoa.
Jim Ryan, ABC News, reporting from Dallas for us this morning. Appreciate it, Jim. Have a good day.
Hey, thanks. Good morning.
Now the top six at six with Bob Surratt on WGN Radio.
6:18. Here's what people are talking about on this day, which is Wednesday, the 4th of March. First of all, it's Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders emerging as the party's clear front runners after last night's voting. The former vice president sweeping the South, the Vermont senator appearing to win California. Last night on CBS, Stephen Colbert on The Late Show had a very interesting parody of Rick James' famous Super Freak song. And here's his Super Tuesday Super Freak from CBS last night.
Is it part of Hawaii? That guy is pretty wealthy.
He used to stop in Frisk.
And then there's Bernie Sanders.
So she'll let me Frisk.
This woman's energetic.
So many plans she's got.
Joe's friends with Obama.
He mentions it a lot.
They're all right. They're all right. Results tonight. Oh, yeah.
Last night on CBS, Stephen Colbert's Late Show, Super Freak Super Tuesday. What did he show? Did he show the actual video clips of the actual Super Freak video at times during that, Joe? Is that what it was?
Yeah, it looked like that. To be honest, I've never seen the Super Freak video, so I can't say whether that's the video or a parody of the video.
Funny stuff. All right,
now,
let's move
page
on.
Two.
I was just going to say that. Vice President Pence said yesterday the government had lifted all restrictions on screening, although White House officials emphasized that the supply of tests may not immediately meet demand. Coronavirus, deadlier than seasonal flu. It does not transmit as easily, though, according to the World Health Organization. Now there are at least 120 confirmed cases in the U.S., 9 deaths, all in the Seattle area. In the entertainment world, like every other aspect of life now, they're being affected. Mariah Carey, BTS, Green Day all canceling upcoming shows because of what they term evolving international travel restrictions stemming from the coronavirus outbreak. In addition, 4 employees of ABC7 here in Chicago were kept away from work today out of concern that they may have been exposed to the coronavirus. Robert Feeder reporting this today. Precautions were taken after an interview with a food service worker at Northwest Community Hospital in Arlington Heights, where a coronavirus patient is being treated. One of the scariest things I heard last night was the possibility this could be an annual event. Will it come back next year? Well, a lot of the medical experts are saying it's probably not a one-off, so we may have to get used to some of this, although you would think we'd have a vaccine, you know, within a year. So let's hope.
Page three.
Global stocks surging as investors cheered former Vice President Biden's victories last night, and also the Fed's emergency rate cut, foreshadowing further government stimulus, perhaps. We'll get more on this from our financial guru, Terry Savage. She'll be on with us this morning after the news at 8:30.
Page four.
In Tennessee, they are under a state of emergency after its deadliest tornado day in 7 years. At least 24 people killed, dozens more unaccounted for after storms ripped through the Nashville area just after midnight. Actually, it was about, we talked to Spike Odell yesterday. I think he said it was about 2 a.m. Thousands still without power there. Search and rescue teams are working to locate the missing. The destruction and confusion following the storms led some polling places in the state and surrounding areas to extend their hours last night to accommodate Super Tuesday voters.
Dome, it may concern.
For the first time in more than 4 years, NASA is accepting applications for its next crop of astronauts. Applicants have to be U.S. citizens and meet one of the stringent education requirements, which include having either a master's degree in a STEM field, a medical degree, or a combination of a STEM degree and test pilot training. Potential astronauts must also have at least 2 years of related professional experience or have completed at least 1,000 hours of pilot-in-command time in jet aircraft. Then they'll still have to pass NASA's long-duration spaceflight physical. Applicants are required to complete an online assessment that can take up to 2 hours to finish. That deadline to apply March 31st. Last time I talked to Jim Lovell, who still lives up in the Lake Forest area, I asked him about all of the requirements to be an astronaut, everything you have to go through, and then you go fly, in his case, like four times in space. How does he feel when he's, you know, stuck on the expressway in traffic? I mean, how do you deal with that when you've, you know, flown to the moon? Must be a little difficult. But I can't get him to really express how he feels about that. You know, those astronaut types, they're kind of buttoned down.
Stand by for news.
Planning to park in front of your television for the NCAA tournament this month?
Yes.
Well, you know what? We'll see what happens with the coronavirus. Everybody might be watching it on TV and nobody in stadiums. Well, you could watch it on TV and be at home. Or you could live inside a Buffalo Wild Wings restaurant. And as part of a promotion for March Madness, Buffalo Wild Wings is introducing B&B Dubs, a bed and breakfast located inside their Lincoln Park restaurant here in Chicago. Two winners plus one friend for each traveled to Chicago to live inside this pop-up living space for one night during March Madness. The space features bunk beds, flat-screen TVs, and in-room dining. Winners can also choose to get out of bed and walk directly into the Buffalo Wild Wings restaurant to watch March Madness games from the bar.
I think that's a great idea.
Do you?
Sign me up.
Yeah. You have a little party? Wonder who dreamed up this promotion. Yeah. You know what? Very soon now, the betting will begin, right? Everybody at work, you have these pools. And I have never won a cent. So I don't go into any of the into the pools. I think my problem is I don't really understand them anyway. But do they do that around here every year?
Well, yeah, but see, now sports gambling is so mainstream that the people who've done it illegally around here probably won't anymore, because it's the thrill is out.
Yeah,
because now you could just go to Indiana and do it legally.
I don't know about that. We have our reporter Ryan Burrow.
I wasn't naming any names,
no,
Mary.
Not at all.
He's in charge of it.
He runs all our pools.
Yes. He runs.
Well, it always used to fall on the sports department to do it.
Well,
and
it should,
I never did.
It should.
Well, but I never wanted to get involved.
Dave is
in
too
that
clean.
Stuff.
Yeah.
So
well, just don't
gotta go to the corrupt news department.
But I wouldn't have mentioned Ryan's name, Mary.
Oh,
tell him just ask me. You know, does he walk around with the grid or whatever that is?
He's probably on his way in right now. I better get out of here.
I don't understand it. I don't know. So
I'll help you with it.
Well, at times, you know, in the past, I have contributed and just, you know, for the heck of it, and to make it more interesting watching the games. But then I finally, a few years ago, decided, you know what, why am I still doing this? You know, why don't I just throw my money out the window?
What's fun, though?
We'll fill out a bracket Monday morning.
Brackets, that's what I don't understand.
Fill out a bracket Monday morning. We'll help you.
Okay.
Okay.
Do I have to give you part of my winnings?
No. No, consider it a service.
Okay, then I'll do it.
And that's the way it is.
This has been the Top 6 at 6 with Bob Saras on WGN Radio.
Good day.
So when you heard the news that American Samoa last night went to Michael Bloomberg, did you think, oh, what? Where? American Samoa is a U.S. territory, not a state. Its residents are not considered U.S. citizens, only U.S. nationals. The island does not participate in the general presidential election, but it does get a voice in the nominating process for both Democrats and Republicans. It also does not get full representation in Congress, but similar to Washington, D.C. and Puerto Rico, it does get a non-voting delegate in the U.S. House. Here's your geography lesson this morning. American Samoa is a U.S. territory covering seven South Pacific islands. Capital is Pago Pago, whose natural harbor is framed by volcanic peaks, including 1,700-foot-high Rainmaker Mountain. Sounds like a nice place. So now you know about American Samoa. We'll talk more about Super Tuesday coming up with the moderator of Face the Nation. She was on CBS News last night. Margaret Brennan joins us this morning at about 7:18. And I knew this would happen. Some feedback after our conversation with Orion Samuelson. From the 773 area code, Bob, organic foods have the benefit of being grown sustainably. It might not be about a health aspect for anybody, but more of a sustaining the earth issue. And then we heard from the 815 area code, farm fresh eggs do not need refrigeration unless they're washed. And from 847, we were talking about farmers markets also with Orion. Woodstock has a year-round farmers market as well. Yeah, there are plenty of those around. Orion, not a fan of organic foods. So I knew we would hear about that. I don't spend the extra money on organic foods for things like avocados, where, you know, the fruit's covered, there's a skin, you know, bananas, you know, but like apples and berries. I think organic is a good idea.
You know, I always feel like I'm being ripped off with organic because you'd never know where what it means. I feel like, yeah, I don't know what it means, whether or not it really comes from a place that's organic, whether there's some sort of jargon that's used to qualify it as organic. I just never do it.
Yeah. Well, right. What's the determination? How has that been labeled? Why has it been labeled? What are the requirements? It's confusing.
I buy some organic lettuce the other day, you know, in the container. I just thought it looked better. Yeah. I don't know why. But then the bananas were so much more, and they looked exactly the same. I'm like, what the heck?
I have found that organic bananas go bad faster.
They do.
Well, mm-hmm. Probably because they're not filled with pesticides,
right,
I guess. But then again, the fruit is protected by the peel, so yeah. Why do you need to buy organic bananas?
Not eating the peel.
And I know Steve Grzanich is concerned. Big Macs are not organic, Steve.
Not even the cheese, really?
No.
Doggone it.
Not organic. 6:43. We'll talk to Attorney Karen Conti here in just a couple of minutes about some interesting cases in the law. One concerning Edward Doliak. One of his associates has been sentenced to 2 years in prison. What about the former Fast Eddie? And also, Rod Blagojevich has been stripped of his law license. Will he ever get it back? Karen has some thoughts on that and more. Let's say good morning to Karen Conti, attorney at Conti Law. How you doing, Karen?
I'm doing fine, Bob.
Last night we heard the news about Rod Blagojevich being stripped of his law license. Was that surprising to you? And do you think he will ever get it back? Can he get it back?
Not surprising at all. When somebody commits a crime of dishonesty, wire fraud, perjury, bribery, extortion, basically our licensing commission says, you know, this affects moral turpitude and it reflects poorly on the practice of law. So they're going to disbar you for that. Now, is it possible that he could get his license back? Yes, if he did good deeds and he got counseling and he did all of those things. But I think in a case like this that was so public and so expansive and so resoundingly guilty, I don't think, as a practical matter, he will ever get it back.
If he does practice law again, can you imagine the TV commercials and the billboards? It's mind-boggling.
I don't want to. I do not want to imagine it.
Associate of the Verdoliak firm was sentenced to 2 years in prison, as you know. Ed Verdoliak is also charged. Haven't seen or heard from him much lately. Will he plead guilty? What is his situation?
Plead guilty last year, and I think it was sort of done fairly quietly because I don't really remember a lot of media attention to it. But Verdoliak will be sentenced in April, and this guy who was involved in the same transaction, what happened was there was tobacco litigation, billions of dollars were paid by the tobacco companies to the various states because of all the money they paid out to take care of Medicaid and all the people who were affected by tobacco. And for some reason, Verdoliak somehow got a portion of what the lawyers got, and it was a lot of money. Sasso is also involved in it, or this gentleman. So, you know, Verdoliak could do 2 years for this, and at age 82, that may be a death sentence for him. We have to also be concerned for him because he's got a criminal history. As you recall, he went to jail for 10 months for a crime he committed, another tax evasion crime. The judge might go hard on him.
In the headlines today, the tragic case of the murder of police commander Paul Bauer, and the headline reads like this: alleged gunman's attorney says he didn't know Bauer was an officer before firing. So is the defense here going to be that? There's another story, ABC News, their I-team reporting that he says the case against him is fabricated. What do you see here in this case?
Well, it's interesting that the latter, supposedly the defendant wrote a letter to the media saying, I didn't kill him, it was friendly gunfire. But the problem with that defense is that if you are a fleeing felon and a police officer is killed, even by friendly fire, you could still be guilty of felony murder. So that doesn't exonerate him. What could exonerate him is a self-defense, as you said, where he didn't know Bauer was a police officer. He wasn't wearing a police uniform, but I think the evidence they say is going to show that he had a radio that was very loud and that he said that he was a police officer and that he should have known. This guy has a problem because he's got four felony convictions. He was wearing body armor, and here's a guy who's going to have to explain that on the witness stand if he gets up and wants to say that he did not know that this was a police officer.
I mean, you would assume that Commander Bauer did identify himself as a police officer, did say that, but how can you prove that? There's no recording of that, is there?
And not that I'm aware of, and that is a problem because this whole thing happened apparently in a hallway where there was nobody there except the two of them. So this presents a problem for the prosecution, but again, the defendant will have to go on the stand and say that there was no evidence that he was a police officer. And the problem is this guy has been convicted four times of four felonies, and a good prosecuting lawyer is going to cross-examine him for days about his lack of credibility and the fact that he's a violent guy.
And now to the coronavirus, and people are planning spring vacations, and the question is, what happens if you need to cancel airlines, hotels? What are your legal rights here, Karen? I know a lot of the airlines are making exceptions to their normal rules.
Yes, I think a senator from Connecticut just came out and made an announcement to all the airlines saying, you know, you got to refund fees here. You've got to just do the right thing, and hopefully the airlines are going to fall into place. But generally, it's a contract. And if they can't make good on the contract, like, for instance, you can't fly into China, well, you get your money back because they can't meet their part of the bargain. But if it's just something that you don't feel comfortable going to Italy, in fact, I have tickets to Italy in June, so I'm contemplating what I'm going to do. And my guess is going to be I can get a refund. If you look at the various policies from the different airlines, they all have different policies about what they're doing. I think they're going to get more lenient, I would imagine, because I don't think I don't think the government, I don't think the airlines, I don't think anyone wants to encourage people to be traveling to bad places during this period of time. Couple other hints, though, Bob. You know, you want to look at your travel insurance. You want to look at your credit card if you booked trips with certain credit cards like Chase and American Express are very good about having providing refunds, and Airbnbs, for instance, there's extenuating circumstances might be deemed to be the coronavirus. So you're going to want to look at the policies very carefully to see what your rights are.
Have we heard anything from hotels about what they're doing or not doing?
It's you know, again, if you have a refundable ticket, a refundable hotel, certainly you're going to get that back. But all varying levels of this, you know, some of them are being nice about it and saying, well, you can use it at another hotel. Some are not. And if you book through Expedia or those travel sites, those are the difficult ones because those are the ones where you have to, you know, deal with not only this hotel but with the travel booking site. I'm hoping that we're going to get some government policies here where they're just going to try to loosen this up for people so they don't lose what could amount to, you know, millions of dollars.
Oh, for sure. And finally, Harvey Weinstein, he's going to be sentenced next week in Los Angeles. And what's next for him then after that? He's facing more charges in California, isn't he?
Yes, he's going to be sentenced in the New York case. That's very quick sentencing. I have some colleagues who are trying that case, and they believe that he's going to be sentenced to at least 5 years and maybe up to, you know, plus 20 years. And that's also a death sentence for him, and he's not going to go away to a good place, probably. And I think all of the other women who have come forward, I think that's going to be taken into account by this judge, and I think that when he goes out to California to have his case tried there, that conviction in New York is going to be used against him. So he's got an uphill battle here.
He sure does. Karen Conti, attorney at Conti Law. Thanks as always, Karen. Appreciate it.
Have a good day, Bob.
10 minutes after 7 o'clock, and it's time for our check on extremely local news from Block Club Chicago. Seamus Toomey is here, and first up, a story about a problem at a grocery store in Ravenswood. What's going on there, Seamus?
Well, anyone that's familiar with the Mariano's in Ravenswood will know what I'm talking about here. Their escalators, the ones that take them from the street level up to the main store, as well as the ones that take them from the store up to the upper level parking deck, have been out of service for months. And people, the shoppers there, have just about had enough of it. They've started some parody accounts on Instagram making fun of it.
Uh-oh.
And, you know, I've been reading the comments online, and every other comment is something like, this is a first world problem.
Yeah.
But as someone pointed out, well, you know, disabilities are a problem all over the world. And for people that struggle with going up and down stairs or hauling their bags up to their car or to the street level, you know, it's no joke. There are elevators there, but anyone that's taken an elevator at a supermarket knows sort of, you know, what you're getting into there with, you know, 1,000 people in there and you can only fit a couple carts. So it's an interesting problem. I think what it also sort of picked the scab on is, how are Mariano's really doing ever since Dick Mariano left and Kroger took over? The sort of the prevailing opinion for these shoppers that we talk to is that things have gone downhill, particularly at that Ravenswood Mariano, since it was, you know, the fresh, cool thing when it opened in 2014.
People were excited there at 1800 West Lawrence when the store opened under the previous ownership.
Right, and I think they're saying sort of like the luster is off a little bit. The thrill is gone, our reporter Alex Hernandez wrote. But, you know, I think this speaks to, you know, what happens when, you know, a larger chain purchases stores around and tries to cut some costs or, you know, standardize things. But it's really getting people in Ravenswood really irritated to just to walk in once a week and see that they still haven't fixed these escalators.
Well, Kroger needs to, you know, show that they care and do something there. I mean, you would think now they will. We'll see.
I would think so. You know, a little bad publicity goes a long way. You know, particularly, these shoppers have said, listen, we want to support this store. We really liked it when you guys opened, but, you know, give us a little bit of love.
Let's see. Better news in Inglewood, right? The Fresh Market. What are they doing?
Yeah, this is something we've been following pretty closely. There's a push to really get some more investment into the 63rd Street corridor in Englewood and really help revive it. And there's a handful of not-for-profit groups as well as local neighborhood groups that are behind an effort to open up a brand new locally sourced vegetable and fruit market at Racine and 63rd. In fact, they broke ground on it just a couple days ago. They're calling it the Englewood Fresh Market, and it's phase one of about three different things that these groups are coming together to do. The next one will include some residential units down the street. They're really just trying to pump some a combination of foundation money as well as this neighborhood opportunity fund money that the city provides. Basically, they developers, if you want to build really big downtown or in the West Loop, you've got to pay into this fund, and it gets spread out into neighborhoods, particularly on the south and west side, to help businesses out there.
And finally, we have the Logan Square project there, the affordable housing project near the Blue Line. What's the latest on that?
Right. This is a recurring topic you'll hear from Block Club reports. We like to keep an eye on these battles over affordable housing all around the city because it's really a hot topic, and increasingly so. In Logan Square, which everyone knows is booming, they can't build apartments there fast enough, but the rents are pretty high. And the politicians and local leaders are trying to find some way to preserve affordable housing so we don't kick out all the people that have been living there for the last 50 years. So one of the ideas is to take a parking lot right next to the CTA Blue Line stop in Logan Square and turn it into an all affordable housing. 60% of it would go for folks with CHA vouchers. And the city has called this sort of a perfect storm. It's a city-owned lot next to public transit in an area that needs affordable housing. So they're going forward with this project. But a bunch of the local neighborhood business owners, as well as landlords, including prominent landlord Mark Fishman, have filed a lawsuit trying to block this project from going forward, saying it basically violates the Illinois Constitution against arbitrary and capricious zoning changes that benefit one particular group. So it's going to be interesting. We'll see how this plays out. This project has a lot of support from the local leaders, including the local alderman, who's always been in sort of a battle with Mark Fishman over these topics. So it's something we'll watch closely. But this is, like I said, right by the Blue Line stop, right in Logan Square near the monument.
Keep us posted. I know you will. Seamus Toomey, Block Club Chicago, with our extremely local news. It's 7:21. Margaret Brennan, good morning. They're playing your song.
I love it. Good morning to you.
Margaret is the moderator of Face the Nation. We see her here on CBS 2 in Chicago, Sunday mornings at 10. And I saw you last night on the CBS News election coverage, Margaret. My favorite story, and then you can tell me yours from last night, that Michael Bloomberg gets American Samoa, the six delegates, and he spent $900 on that.
Yeah, it was a $500 million advertising spending spree. He's still buying ads in other states, and not a lot of delegates or wins other than the one that you pointed out, American Samoa, to show for it. But what's interesting about Michael Bloomberg is that he said he's going to continue funding even if he's not the nominee. So a lot of what he's building out, if you look at his ads, they're targeting Trump. They're not targeting his running competitors. And he says he's going to hand over all the infrastructure he built to the party nominee. So you can look at it as a massive donation to the Democratic Party if he does drop out, as some are speculating, after Florida.
So Bloomberg says he's reassessing, and the thinking is eventually he will throw everything behind Joe Biden. Do you agree with that?
Well, his campaign has been saying it would be just standard practice to reassess what happens after Super Tuesday and not to overread that. But what we heard from the candidate himself, when my colleague asked him, yesterday, you know, how is it that you see a path where you can win and ultimately become the party nominee? And he said a brokered convention is the only way. A contested convention is the only way. He's looking forward to July and the idea that this race could get so messy that there's not a clear front runner in terms of delegate lead, and that they could go into a situation where, you know, party officials get involved and cast votes. So he was betting on that really messy scenario, but what happened last night may make that scenario less likely, because Joe Biden pulled off a massive political comeback. I mean, the scale of his win over Bernie Sanders and Bloomberg and Elizabeth Warren is pretty impressive. He won every single state in the South by double digits. He also won in the Midwest, Minnesota, and Texas. And he said for Minnesota, it was all thanks to Amy Klobuchar bowing out when she did.
I think I saw somebody on CBS last night talking about how perhaps a third of the voters made up their minds in the last few days. And obviously, Joe Biden had this late surge. So was his big win, especially in the South, something that surprised a lot of you? Or at this point, were you expecting something like that?
Well, it was not surprising that support came for him from the South. That is what Joe Biden had consistently said. He expected that those were Biden voters, largely African-American members of the Democratic Party who stood up and came out for him. That's who he said he was betting on, and he was dismissing those early states like Iowa and New Hampshire for not being as diverse and therefore basically not having Biden voters in them, rather than a test of his own popularity or ability to persuade all voters. So there was a little bit of skepticism given that, you know, he was coming in distant fourth and fifth places in those early races. So it did surprise people that this wasn't, he didn't eke out a squeaker of a win. He really led in the South by double digits, that African-American voters came out for him. Older voters also came out for him. A lot of the quote-unquote establishment members of the party did, it appears, when we look at the data from exit polls. That's what it shows in many of these places. Bernie Sanders gets an excitement factor among younger voters, but that wasn't enough here to win in those states that we just rattled off. It should be interesting to see what happens in the next few weeks. But at this point, most people, I think, are now looking at this as a two-man race. But it's important to remember what it took to get Biden there. It took Amy Klobuchar dropping out. It took Pete Buttigieg dropping out. And it took that win in South Carolina among African-American voters coming out in such strong numbers for him to persuade the party that he is, in fact, worthy of front-runner status. He had really kind of lost the confidence of many over the past few months.
It's 7:26. Margaret Brennan is the moderator of Face the Nation on CBS. The question, though, would be, I think, does Joe Biden have the money and the organization now to keep rolling on this? Obviously, a big boost last night, but now what?
Well, that's the key question you're focusing on, is he's got to play catch-up on fundraising, but what we've been reporting out is that many of the big money donors to candidates who bowed out, Pete Buttigieg and Amy Klobuchar, big reason in their decision of when to pull the plug was because those donors were saying, wait, we got to consolidate behind one party leader, essentially, and that's going to be Joe Biden here. So those donors may be switching over to become part of his support, but you also have what Mike Bloomberg has promised. If he bows out, that he'll hand this over, his party machine that he's been building with, you know, interest groups that he's been donating to and supporting over the past few years as well. So there's a lot that Joe Biden can turn to, but he likely will need that help.
Do you know who the guest is going to be yet Sunday on Face the Nation, Margaret?
Oh, see, Wednesday is Monday for us.
Oh, I get it.
Face the Nation land, because we work weekends. So we'll have to see, you know. Obviously, all the candidates are of interest to us. At this point, we had Bernie Sanders last weekend, and I'm sure he's not he's not so happy with his turnout. A lot of the confidence he expressed about the American South was not borne out by the votes last night.
Well, I got to tell you, I watch you every week here, and what strikes me is how you don't let anybody get away with anything. You are relentless in your questioning. You're like a dog with a bone, and these people, you get all the important guests, and you know you're very pleasant and very professional, but I'd be afraid to be on with you, to be quite honest.
Well, I'd like to think that means I'm doing my job, because these days, if you're listening and you're only agreeing, then you're not consuming the right way, right? We got to be pain in the neck to everyone to do our job.
Well, you do it well. I like how you just fire off machine gun style these questions. And I'll tell you something, compared to Chuck Todd and George Stephanopoulos, I mean, those people, they're wusses compared to Margaret Brennan on Face the Nation on CBS Sunday mornings at 10 here on CBS 2. Well, great talking to you, Margaret. I know you had a late night last night on CBS, so we appreciate you starting your day with us here today.
Thanks for having me. Great to join you.
Great to join you, but I'm not going to be on Face the Nation because I'm frightened, just so you know. Have a good day.
It's take care.
7:29.
You did fine, Bob.
You think so, Mary?
Yes, you handled it well. I refrained from
going any further as to why I think everybody does come on there happily, and even though she's very, very tough.
She is said, tough, right? But that was good what you said.
Thank you very much.
I think she was happy with that.
Okay. Coming up, we'll talk to Jeffrey Bear. You see him on Channel 11. He's got a new special that really sounds interesting. It's on tonight about riding the L and what you see along the way. We'll get to him shortly after the news. Was Margaret mad at me, Vivian? Did you talk to her after the interview?
Mad that she just
pardon me?
That she just hung up.
Don't tell me that. She's
no,
okay.
She's great. She's good.
Okay, good. Well, then we'll have her on again. But I'm not going on Face the Nation. We've been talking about the coronavirus and how it is affecting just all sorts of different sectors of our lives. And the sports world is one of those. And I'm looking at the Sun-Times story today, citing that upcoming Cubs series in London, June 13 and 14, and Major League Baseball hasn't ruled that out yet, but they sent a memo, I guess, to all 30 teams yesterday with a list of updates and recommendations. And Dave, do you think that they're going to cancel? I mean, Chris Bryant, who's the player rep for the Cubs, said they hadn't received an advisory from the union yet.
I mean, don't you think it really depends on what happens here? They have to kind of watch it. It's like anything else. And who knows? Maybe by June it will have run its course, or maybe London won't be affected the way
how long can they wait? I mean,
they're
going to have to make a decision early.
I think the issue becomes for fans who are traveling. I don't think it affects. I mean, they have to plan, obviously, but they could also move those games back to this country and play mm-hmm. in one of the ballparks. Mm-hmm. I think it's a St. Louis home series, I think.
Yeah.
I have to go back and look at the schedule, but regardless, I mean, they could play at Wrigley Field, play at Busch Stadium, but you are affecting a lot more people than just the teams. I guess that's really the issue, but I think they have some time. I would think they don't have to make a decision tomorrow on that. I think there are more immediate issues they will have to deal with, and all sports will.
Regular season for baseball, three weeks away.
Yeah, you would think that, you know, that would be something that will get a lot of consideration. And just like the NBA said they're doing it, the NHL has been looking at the issue. And
college sports?
We mentioned college sports, that the NCAA is not ruling out playing the NCAA tournament with empty stands. Now, that's not saying they're going to do that, and that's not saying that they've even come out and said that that's something we're deciding whether or not to do. They're looking at all possible contingencies. And Chicago State, we mentioned the story earlier, has said they won't send their men's basketball team to games regular season games in the Western Athletic Conference Washington State against Seattle University or Utah Valley State this week, and they haven't decided yet whether to attend the conference tournament in Las Vegas next week. They're also not going to host two women's games at the Jones Convocation Center on the campus in Chicago this week. So
Fluid. Cubs GM Jed Hoyer said everything with this situation is fluid right now, and Major League Baseball has assigned a task force to monitor developments and precautionary measures.
So. Yeah, and remember, the NFL plays games in Europe, although I guess they still have to figure out their collective bargaining agreement.
Yeah, there is that.
But, that's further down the road, but those are all issues I think we'll be hearing more about.
Okay, let me know when we are required to work from home so I can set up the microphone next to my bed in the morning. Tonight on WTTW Channel 11, it's a new series called Chicago by L, courtesy of Jeffrey Bear. Good morning, Jeff. How you doing?
Good morning.
Good to see you.
I am so excited to be looking out this window. What floor is it? 18th floor. This magnificent view of Navy Pier. And I don't know how you concentrate up here.
Well, if you listen to the show, you know I don't. And of course you appreciate this because you still work with the Architecture Foundation.
I do. Periodically give tours on the riverboats for the Chicago Architecture Center.
And they're right down the street here from us, and we enjoy talking to those folks about the great tours because we certainly never take it for granted here, these wonderful surroundings, these buildings. And you have covered the city by river, by blimp, by helicopter.
Bicycle, by food.
And
time machine.
You've got the Chicago by L series. You know what? I still refer to those L lines as the Ravenswood,
sure,
the Howard.
Absolutely. The Howard Dan Ryan line and the Lake Street line and all of it.
Did you ride them all for the series?
I did. So we started about a year ago, and I and also the producer, Eddie Griffin, we rode every single L line from one end to the other, which surprisingly did not take as long as I thought it would. I thought it would take weeks. I did it in a couple of days. I had a yellow legal pad. I was looking out the window, madly writing things down. People thought I was crazy. A lot of people asked me what I was doing. I'm a lifelong L rider, and I saw things I'd never seen before out the window.
You do notice things on the L. I was always fascinated by the back porches in the different neighborhoods.
Absolutely.
That you see.
So in the show, we actually interview three different people, maybe four, who live, like, you could literally reach out their window and like touch an L train going by, and they love it.
They probably don't even hear it anymore.
That's what they all say. What one guy and his wife have parties on their back porch, and just as we are interviewing these people, you know, they have to pause when the train goes by, and then they start speaking again. One guy's window in his shower stall looks out on the tracks, and he said every now and then the train will have to stop out. And I said, "Well, what are you? You're naked in the shower." So I just keep shampooing my hair. I wave to the motorman. You know, it's fine.
Yeah, it's a tourist attraction. So was the idea here to explore the areas that are very close to the tracks in all the neighborhoods?
Yeah. You know, every one of these shows I do on WTTW, you have to have sort of an organizing principle. So we would look for like a route that we can follow, whether that's the river or Dixie Highway through the south suburbs. And so this helps you kind of narrow down your focus. But what's great is that we're really visiting a lot of neighborhoods that don't get a lot of positive visibility on TV, because the L runs everywhere in Chicago. And so this has been a great opportunity to really tell the story, the real story, good and bad, of all these neighborhoods along the L.
It's a fascinating idea, and this is not a one-off. This is a series, correct?
No, this is it's a kind of a mirror. That's a 2-hour and 9-minute show. So it's one show that covers every L line in Chicago. So obviously we can't get into tremendous detail. We're sort of selective. We pick certain neighborhoods to feature, but we do run the program over and over again on WTTW over the years. And of course, you can watch it anytime you want on our website after tomorrow, WTTW.com/L. And by the way, that's letter L, Bob. You know, in Chicago, it's not E-L.
Right.
It's L. Spelling the L, E-L, is like putting ketchup on a hot dog.
Well, as Steve Johnson pointed out in the Trib, it is a very nice review of the show. Last paragraph here of his review. And it quotes, he quotes you, Jeff, saying, one of the old jokes that I always say is, in New York, they call it the subway even when it's elevated. And in Chicago, we call it the L even when it's underground.
True. Very true.
And so, all right, the premiere is tonight at 7:30 on Channel 11. And are you always thinking about the next project while you're riding the
Definitely.
L? Are you thinking, wait a minute, this reminds me, what I'm seeing now reminds me, I should do a story on, you know, basements. How do you come up with
tunnels in Chicago?
Uh-huh.
This is actually the first time in, we've been doing these for 25 years. This is the first time in years that we don't know what the next show is going to be, because we have about three, which I can't reveal, but we have about three different ideas that we're sort of debating in terms of which one will be the best one to do next. Usually around this time of the year, I can already tell you what next year's special will be, but we're still figuring that out.
You know, there are so many, the city's rich with those kinds of ideas, and when I'm walking around downtown, even though I grew up here, I'm still always fascinated, especially when you get out of your car and you get on foot, you notice things you don't notice when you're driving. And you know, those classic scenes, those cliched scenes in the old movies where, you know, Jimmy Stewart would be walking around downtown and they'd project the city behind him as he was looking up at all the buildings. That's me when I'm downtown still. It's fascinating. It just never ceases to amaze me.
I mean, I just feel lucky that I've made my career here in Chicago, because, as you say, we do sort of never run out of things to talk about. And with this L Tour program that we're talking about right now, you know, it's really, I'm a train geek, so I love the L, and there's tons of stuff about the L in the show. We ride an L train that was built in 1923 that still operates on the CTA tracks. And we meet the guy whose voice you hear, you know, next stop, Belmont. He lives in Milwaukee. His name is Lee Crooks, but we interview him on the train, and so he's like listening to himself, and people are like looking at us like, wait a minute, that's you.
He's got a large audience.
But all that being said, this is really an excuse to get off the train and go into the neighborhood. So we go to like the Asian night market, the street food market on Argyle. We go to a vegan soul food restaurant in Chatham. We visit some people who are rebuilding homes in Austin. And as you say, you know, and particularly even when you get outside of downtown, there's just endless stories in Chicago and people to meet. People love, and they're so devoted to their neighborhoods. You know, that's the thing that really stood out for me working on this program. I feel like it's got so much heart. Like, you meet these people who live in these neighborhoods, and they're so proud of their neighborhoods, they're so devoted to them. And that's, I think, something different than we've done before.
Well, that's one of the great things about Chicago, the sense of community. Do you find, even though you've been giving architecture tours for years, you've been doing these shows on Channel 11 for years, that you discovered things you never knew about the city as you were riding these L lines?
All the time. I always call it the I never knew that phenomenon. People tell me that when they watch the shows, you know, I've lived here all my life, I never knew that. Well, that's because I put something in the show that I never knew. A good example was on the South Side when we were riding the L train around 51st Street. I look out the window and there's this jumble of shipping containers. It's a shipping container mall at 51st Street they're trying to incubate entrepreneurs. It's more affordable than bricks and mortar. Got off the train, met the woman who runs it, Karan Johnson, who's this unbelievably charismatic and a person who's so devoted to, you know, what people are doing. And then just a few blocks away, I look out the building, out the train, and there's this amazing old sort of social, I don't know what it was called, the Forum. It says the Forum on it. And the front is built like over 100 years ago. I'd never heard of it. I Googled it, and we feature that in the show. So there's many, many things like that that I'm always discovering anew.
It's a lot of fun if you take the L to Wrigley Field or Guaranteed Rate, what you see in the neighborhood of the ballpark, isn't
yeah.
it?
Well, and you know, it's such a contrast because, unfortunately, Sox Park is, you know, typical of many ballparks, surrounded by an ocean of parking. So really, it really kind of isolates it from the neighborhood, and have railroad tracks on one side, the Ryan on the other, versus Wrigley, which is just embedded in a neighborhood. Are you a Sox fan? I'm a lifelong Cubs fan.
I am a North Side
guy. Yeah, all right. Yeah. I'm a lifelong Cubs fan. I got to tell you, I thought for this show, hey, I'm going to throw out the first pitch at Wrigley. I'm going to sing Take Me Out to the Ballgame. They wouldn't even let us in the ballpark. We had to film from a rooftop across the street. Sox Park, they threw open the doors. I throw out the first pitch at Sox Park. A little bit embarrassing what happened. You'll have to watch the show. And then they let me groom the infield with the sod father, this like legendary groundskeeper.
Oh, Bossert, right?
Bossert, yeah. Roger Bossert. Mm-hmm. You know, I was a little disappointed there, but it was a thrilling to do at Sox Park.
Are you converted now?
I don't know.
You are on the White Sox radio station now.
That's right.
Jeffrey Bear, tonight on Channel 11, you get to see the premiere of Chicago by L, and we'll be watching, as always. All your programs are great, and as you say, they replay them all the time, but you know what? Yeah, they're even good the second and third time, because you can't possibly absorb all of the information at one time.
Even I can't.
Say hello to our friends over there. You know, I once worked over there.
You,
Jeff.
Did. We miss you. We had a nice long run there at WTTW with you on Chicago Tonight, and so it's so great to see you again.
I enjoyed it. By the way, somebody, my going away little party, I was presented, because I am a Cub fan, with the Addison Street sign, I think, from the L stop there in Addison, and I forgot to bring it home with me that night. And can you find out where it went?
I'll ask one of our floor crew there. They know where everything is.
We'll be watching tonight. Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you.
It's 12 minutes after 8 o'clock. Let's check in with Dean Richards, get the entertainment news today. Well, I guess it didn't take long for stars to come out and support the Nashville tornado victims, right, Dean? Oops, wait a minute, let me flip his switch on. There we go. Tell us about it, Dean.
Yeah, you know, since so many stars are and live in Nashville, you know, they are based there because it's such a music capital. Lots of people were affected by this. Carrie Underwood was telling stories yesterday about how in the middle of the night when this tornado struck, you know, they were woken out of their homes. Her husband grabbed their two kids and, you know, everybody went down into the basement. Casey Musgraves, same thing, saying, you know, they heard it in the middle of the night. They are all okay, but, you know, everyone's hearts are going out to people who were not as fortunate. Dolly Parton, who is a native of Tennessee, tweeted out, praying for all those affected by devastating storms in Tennessee. My heart is especially with families who lost loved ones. We are all with you. Reese Witherspoon, also native of Tennessee, tweeting out a very similar message. And, you know, my guess would be that there will be benefit concerts, stars donating huge amounts of money to help in the cleanup and rebuild process of this horrible catastrophe that's happened there. We know what that's like to have, you know, tornadoes come through the area. We've had it happen many times in the Chicago area. I don't think we've ever had it happen in the middle of the night. I can't imagine, you know, being woken out of a dead sleep to, you know, this kind of devastation going on outside.
Yeah, terrible situation in Nashville. Alex Trebek is doing something charitable as well, isn't
he? Yeah, this is pretty nice. Yesterday he donated $100,000 to a shelter in, I think it's in the Los Angeles area. He had heard about the shelter that was doing amazing things, and just decided to make this enormous donation. He shows up at the shelter. He meets with the CEO, got a tour of the facility, looked at their financial records, did a little more research on his own. Then he writes a check for $100,000. It's the Hope of the Valley Rescue Mission, and they fight poverty and hunger and homelessness. They're going to name a part of their facility after him and his wife. All of this while Alex Trebek continues to get treatment for stage 4 pancreatic cancer as well. So, you know, if you didn't already have enough admiration for Alex Trebek, here's just one more reason for his complete generosity at a time when he could be completely focusing on himself.
He's still working, too, isn't he?
Still working.
Well, yeah, you can't feel sorry for yourself or be troubled by any of the stressful things in your life, right, when you know what he's going through, and as you say, and being charitable at the same time. The coronavirus cancellations continue. Dean, what now?
Well, first of all, an update. You know, everyone's been saying you can't find hand sanitizer anyplace. I stopped at a 24-hour Walgreens this morning on my way, you know, to work. You know, and granted, it's like 3:30 in the morning. But huge shelves full. Hand sanitizer, Clorox wipes. So check, you know, I think maybe stores that may have had a chance to replenish. But also yesterday, I was just searching around on the web, and I learned how to make my own hand sanitizer.
Oh, you're right. There are recipes online now. Yeah. Did you do it?
I bought the ingredients for it. I haven't tried it. It's basically, you know, the rubbing alcohol that you can easily buy, and aloe vera gel. And you, it's like a 2-to-1 mixture, 2-to-1 alcohol to the gel. And you just mix it up, and you've got your own homemade sanitizer.
Some people say vodka is the best. I'm not sure why.
It's
but
also very cleansing.
Well, my prediction, you know, is because everybody's so freaked out about this and being very careful to avoid shaking hands and all the rest, that there will be no flu, no colds, no nothing the rest of the year. It'll be the healthiest year we've ever had.
Right. Birth rate's going to go way down. Everything.
That's right.
But the latest, you know, show after show and movie after movie, has been canceled because of the virus. And now the latest on this is that Mariah Carey has canceled a concert in Honolulu that was supposed to take place on March 10th. She made the decision, she said, because of evolving international travel problems and just erring on the side of safety for both the fans and the crew and everybody else involved. She's going to postpone that show until after Christmas time. In Honolulu instead. I say she just wants to go back to Hawaii when the weather gets cold.
Yeah, good idea.
I did some checking around yesterday because, you know, I'm in theaters all the time, movie theaters, stage theaters, you know, a live theater, concert venues, etc. And, you know, I thought there's a lot of people in these places. And, you know, what kind of precautions are being taken? So I contacted a bunch of theaters and a lot of the places where you go see movies and concerts and plays, and they are very much up to date on what is going on, and they say that they're, you know, taking the necessary precautions. But I think if you're going to go to a movie or a play or someplace where there are a lot of people, it would not be a terrible idea to bring some, you know, the wipes, the Clorox wipes, wipe down your armrests of the chair, wipe down the seats. I'm a little, I've been germophobic way before any of this started, and I always kind of, you know, do the where my head hits the chair. Mm-hmm. I always thought that that was gross, that somebody else's Brill cream was getting on me, you know, from back in the day, from the 1960s. It's not a terrible idea, I think, to wipe things down if you're going to be in a public place like that.
Yeah, although my wife points out to me that after I shake hands with somebody, if I immediately pull out my hand sanitizer, that's rude, that right. I shouldn't do that. I should at least hide that.
Yeah, I don't know what's, I mean, what are people, I've had a lot of people switch to fist bumping. This morning, we've had some people here at the TV station. And there was just sort of like a Japanese bow.
Hey, that's a good idea.
In, which was, well, that's different.
I like that. I'm going to do that. I want to ask you about this Genesis reunion. Is Phil Collins part of that?
Phil Collins is part of this reunion. They were being interviewed on the BBC this morning for them, which would have been 6 hours ago. But Phil Collins, Tony Banks, Mike Rutherford made the announcement they're going to do a comeback tour. It's going to start in the UK later this year. First time in 13 years that they will have performed together. They're not sure if it's going to come to the U.S. yet, but I hope that it will. We know that Phil Collins has had his share of fairly serious health issues. If he was going to be part of it, that was my first question also. And he said that he will. He just can't play the drums anymore. So his son, Nicholas, will be the drummer. He will be singing. And everybody except Peter Gabriel is Peter Gabriel left the band in 1975, and he's not going to be part of this. But the three Genesis guys that we know best from mostly the 80s, 90s, 2000s. They're all going to be back together again. I've always loved their music. I couldn't be happier.
Yeah, there was a while there where every 9 seconds there was a Phil Collins record on the radio, and people, including Phil Collins, who joked about it, kind of got tired of it. But right. I think we're ready now.
Right. I'm once again, I'm ready to hear Susu Studio.
Well, maybe not that one.
One more time.
Hey, finally, I want to acknowledge this email from Annette. Remember, Dean, we were talking about these hologram concerts dead celebrities.
Right.
Hi, Bob. I think Dean was thinking about the SNL episode in 84 when Ringo was the guest host, and there was a skit where Ringo was wheeled out on a dolly in front of a fan convention and was being auctioned off. Ultimately, he couldn't get any bids. Perhaps that was maybe, what it was.
Maybe that's what I was thinking. I could have sworn that it was like Elvis's jacket, that Elvis's jacket was going on
well,
tour.
Well, there was an SCTV bit
maybe,
like
maybe
that too.
Yeah, yeah, maybe that's what
I think. Was it like Perry Como's sweater or something? I mean, there have been a few of those memorable.
Right. Kids, ask your grandparents who Perry Como is.
It's 8:27. Thanks, Dean. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Okay, bye-bye.
And the Dow is up, and so are we. Terry Savage, our financial expert, with us today. Terry, I'm confused by the different headlines I'm seeing today. One says the Dow up more than 500 points, but it probably doesn't matter. Pay no attention to these wild swings. What's going on here? What do you think?
I think you do not pay attention to the wild swings. You pay attention to your own positions and the possibilities that might impact your own life. So let me say it very clearly, because I've been, you know, I have 25,000 subscribers to my free newsletter. It is free, and I write whenever I'm in the mood, and I've been in the mood a lot lately, and in my columns, which are posted at terrysavage.com. I have been warning for so long, almost 6 or 8 months now, that I was beginning to be a bit embarrassed, but nevertheless continue to warn that bull markets don't last forever. We've been in an astounding bull market. People have profits that they never expected and suddenly think they're geniuses. If you're retired or about to retire, it could be very dangerous. Bear markets average 33% decline. I've seen a couple that have been down 50% and one that stayed down for 10 years. That's all in my up on terrysavage.com. This is not about predicting the end or sell everything. This is about protecting your profits if you're at the stage where you're going to need that money to live on. If you're, it's not the end of America, it's not the end of the world, this coronavirus thing. I'm very confident we will pull through this and look back in however many years, like 9/11, which seemed like the end of America, really, and we all remember that. The whole idea now is to protect your profits. And to that extent, you need to sell down to what I call the sleeping point. A couple of years, maybe, of liquidity in your retirement account if you're going to be withdrawing in the next few years. Maybe I'm wrong. But the worst comes to worst, you have a pile of cash. But at least you sleep well at night. That's where I stand. Not the end of the world, but the potential for a deep and perhaps long bear market. And the reason why is currently the coronavirus, which is impacting business and will continue to impact business. But it could have been something else. A 10-year bull market is a rarity. You won't see it again in your lifetime, I'm quite confident. Surely not in mine.
Here's another statement from one of your colleagues in the financial world that I don't understand, and you, I'm sure, can explain this to me. This person wrote that what is happening right now is more technical than fundamental, a fact that could lead to more upside in the short term. What does that mean exactly?
I have no idea what that means. That's called hedging your bets.
Okay.
Look, the market's bouncing around. We had a huge 3 days of decline. We had a 1,200-point rally. Everybody said, see, I told you so. The market always bounces back. I wrote a newsletter yesterday, and it's a column up on my website, why the market lost its bounce. The market will bounce around, and at these levels, 500 points are really only less than 1% perhaps move in the market. Very much like 30 years ago when the Dow was much lower, a 1% move was like 100 points. So the fact is, this market will be volatile. I think, however, that the underlying fundamentals, what's going on in business, because of the impact of not the virus itself, but the actions that are being taken by businesses, you know, it's not so much that rich people are going to make or lose money. Think about about it. When the Restaurant Association show doesn't come to Chicago, think about all the hotel rooms that are empty and the maids, the ladies who clean those rooms, that are laid off. They need that money to pay for rent and for groceries for their families. So this is the kind of an impact that could spread quickly. I'm not saying it's forever and that America's never bouncing back and having the NRA, the restaurant, you know, convention will be back here next year. But the short-term impact on a lot of people might be dramatic. The headlines in Chicago, the state and local budgets, if there is a need to spend money. There's not a lot of extra money. In fact, we've all been running on very tight budgets at the federal and state and local level. So I'm not trying to engender panic. I'm talking to investors here saying the wise move is to take some of those profits and protect them and have cash or money in a money market fund. I've never said sell everything. I've consistently said if you're in your 20s, 30s, 40s, your $400 or $500 a month into your 401k plan buys more shares of the mutual fund when the price is down. You can ride it out confidently. But retirees, they're the ones that have thought, oh, my dear, we can retire now. We have money. Look at our 401k. And when you look at your 401k and it's going down, it gets scary. So better to sell out some of it near the top than to panic and sell whatever's left near the bottom.
Yep, and don't look. You get financial advice from TerrySavage.com, also in the Trib and on the radio here with Terry. What about the Fed, Terry? And I don't understand. Initially, the market rebounded after the Fed slashed their interest rate. Then it slid back. What's going on here?
Well, I posted, I send in my column to my editors early Monday morning, so I posted a column on the online. It doesn't get into syndication for a few more days. On Monday morning before the Fed cut, saying it's quite obvious that central banks around the world are going to try and cut interest rates. And to me, at that point, it was equally obvious that that wouldn't do anything because nobody is going to make a decision to hop on a plane to Japan because the Fed cut rates. Nobody's going to make a decision to invest in a new plant or whatever it is because the Fed cut rates. First of all, I said it would be psychologically important, so we did have a bounce. Look, I'm not a doomsayer here. I know that this, what's going on now, is about to bring out of the woodwork a lot of doomsayers. I am just trying to do sensible risk management for ordinary people who got lucky is the word, in a bull market that lasted 10 years and don't remember how scary it can be when a market goes down, or don't have the perspective, gosh, Bob, I've been around so long, I figure there must be some purpose for me still being able to talk to people about what bear markets like 73, you know, let me just take you all back. This is in my lifetime. In 72, the Dow, 1972, let's get the right century. In 1972, there was just irrational exuberance. First in 1969, that was a little before me, the Dow went over 1,000. In 72, it went over 1,000. It was like the happy days are here again. In 1973-74, when the options exchange was opened and I was a young trader on the floor, I saw the Dow drop from over 1,000 to an intraday low. I remember that number, 570.01. I looked at an old trader standing near me saying, and I said to him, my God, all of them are down. I mean, stocks like McDonald's went from over 120 down into the low 20s. Avon, 140 to the teens. And those were called the Fabulous 50 in those days. And I looked at this old guy. I knew he was old because he had some gray hair. I've told this story before. And I said, where did all the money go? They all went down. And he looked at me. His name was Paul. And I remember him saying, just as clear as day, he said, well, my dear, it went to money heaven. And I had only known in my life, like this bull market, it had just been a very short life in the markets. I'd only seen the market basically go up. But when I collapsed, I didn't know that money could disappear. I never questioned that money could appear, stocks would go up, and you would make money. It was the first time I saw money literally disappear. Now, that's the first half of the story. The second half of the story is that for 10 years, the market never got above 1,000 again. In 1982, in August, when the great bull market of the 80s and 90s started, the Dow was still around 800.
So, well, the point I'm making is markets can go down further than you think and can stay down further than you think. This is not a prediction. This is called, how do I plan for my life? People today don't want to have money in the bank. Interest rates are going down. You get no return in the bank, but you get no loss in a CD.
The Dow is up right now almost 500 points, and NASDAQ up a little more than 100. So, Terry, does everything depend on how far the coronavirus will spread before it's under control, and how company profits are going to be affected by all this?
It's a little more than that. I mean, I think that we would have had some kind of a reason for the market to go down if it weren't the coronavirus. The coronavirus, we sit here talking, it sounds so callous to discuss, you know, everybody's retirement accounts in terms of how far the virus spreads. It's not even how far the virus spreads. It is the fact that we react, that we're talking about having stadiums that are empty for football and baseball games. It's the fact that businesses are saying no more travel except for essentials, that they're canceling conferences and conventions. That has a real financial impact, not just on the valuations of corporations and their earnings, but as I said earlier, on ordinary people. All of which points to the fact that things are going to slow down. And I really hope and I pray that they will figure something out so this thing doesn't spread in America. But in the meantime, the stock market looks ahead and predicts that it could be worse in terms of earnings for corporations and businesses than anybody's thinking now.
Yeah, and fine.
We're going to have bounces like today.
Right.
That's great. You know, and there's a lot of other things get factored into the stock market. Are we going to have a candidate for the Democrats that promises to tax away wealth and raise taxes? I'm not being political here, but that impacts, if barring the coronavirus, depending on the political outcome, that could have had been a reason for the stock market so highly priced for so long to step back. So I'm not saying that even if the Republican wins that would be good, but I'm saying that the market has kind of been looking for an excuse to take a breather. I think this excuse is a little bit shocking, and therefore the breather might be a little more volatile and in-depth.
Finally, one more thing here quickly, Terry. This Wall Street prognosticator, Peter Schiff, he says the Federal Reserve's latest move is finally the thing that's going to prick the bubble. And he says if it wasn't the coronavirus, it would have been something else. He says, you know, his bets of carnage are finally beginning to crystallize.
Bob, out of the woodwork will come every weird scare master who's to say, I told you so. There's always going to be someone in like a stop clock, you know, the doomsday sayers are right twice a day. This is not, please all listen, this is not about predicting. I fully hope that today's bounce because of a perceived moderate coalition will help the stock market. But I'm saying to you that we have now gotten out of that bull market mentality. We have some serious economic reasons to think that the economy and profits on which stock prices are based will slow. And that if you're a young person, believe in America. To do otherwise is foolish. Nobody ever got rich betting against America. But if you are close to or in retirement and you don't want to face the pain of losing 25-30% of what your 401k balance was in January, then do the sensible thing. You might be wrong. If I'm wrong and you take 20% out now and move it into the money market or the stable value fund or outside your retirement or you're in your IRA in a CD. If I'm wrong, you've got a pile of cash and you missed back the bounce back or you missed some upside. But if I'm right, and you will know that you can ride it out.
Got it.
For the rest of your life. And that's what's really important, is your personal finances, not who's right about the direction of the stock market every day.
More at TerrySavage.com. Yeah, we'll be talking to you again soon, I'm sure, Terry.
And I'll be on at noon today on the noon business hour, so we'll be answering questions then. Yeah,
hopefully the market will still be up then. Thanks, Terry.
Hope so.
What's on the Super Wednesday John Williams show?
Various points during the show, I'll be putting my finger over my nose and doing that racetrack thing. And they're off. The markets are off, down 20.
Nice.
But wait, here comes Super Wednesday.
Phil Georgeff with the call.
Also, folks in Naperville are going back and forth about should they legalize pot sales there. Yesterday we heard from the no. Today we hear from the yes.
And right now we'll hear the news and then John. Have a great day. Thanks for listening. See you tomorrow.